The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's February the 21st, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the day's agricultural news. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Along the way, I'll discuss a survey that farmers in the state of Illinois have taken as it refers to their legal needs and issues. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Join us at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, February 27th for our all-day Agricultural Outlook meeting. This year, our headliner is Dan Bossi of Ag Resource. He'll discuss corn as food, fuel, and feed, and we'll have a look at the very latest from the corn-based ethanol industry and the future of alternative fuels. We'll also have our market projections for corn, soybeans, and cash basis, agricultural weather with AM 580 Chief Meteorologist Ed Kieser and Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, and U of I economist Gary Schnicke will have the latest on crop insurance. Registration at the Beef House in Covington begins at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, with the first panel scheduled for 9 Eastern. The day's activities are free. Lunch is $8.75. We hope to see you there.
Agricultural information
Welcome
is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Taking a look now at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. The numbers finished the day like this in Chicago. Nearby Kansas City, or rather nearby March wheat at 476, up 11.5 cents. The May futures at 490.5 were up 12.5. Corn futures, March contract at 426.25, up 11. The May contract at 439, up 10.75. And July at 448.25, up 10.5. September at 433.5, up 9.75 for the day. And the December contract finished the day at 423. They were up 9.75 on the afternoon. March soybeans at 781.25, up 10.25. The May futures at 798, up 11 cents. July at 811.75, up 10.75. And the November's at $8.32, up 9.5 for the day. March bean meal futures at 231.30, up 70 cents. The March bean oil up 43 at 30.12. And the mercantile exchange numbers finished higher for the day as well, $100.02. And the nearby March feeder cattle, and they were up 40 for the day. February live cattle, 80 cents higher at 93.47.5, and the April's at 96.40 were up $1.05. April lean hogs, 12.5 cents higher at 66.97.5 for the afternoon. On the line with us this afternoon to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Todd.
Let's talk just a little bit about what's been happening at the Chicago Board of Trade. A big day at the board, new contract highs across the floor.
Yes, a couple things. Two weather people, Crompcast and the Meteorological Society of Australia, both indicated the potential for warmer, drier summer, and of course a wet spring. And as a result of that, that was enough gasoline to help propel the market higher. We did talk, of course, this morning about the 12 million acre people is getting, my opinion, a C-. We also talk about the people in the ethanol industry saying that the ethanol industry is going to stumble. I give them a D-. And some people are saying crude oil prices are going down to $47 a barrel in the next 6 months, and I give them a D or an F. But the marketplace is a different animal, and we do see some very strong prices. The $8 new crop bean sales, I had customers call me from Wayne City that said they got $8. Farmers in Oakland got $8, and Danville, Illinois got $8. So the more people in the Midwest and in the bean belt that get $8, I think the chances are reduced for a big corn switch in those areas. So as a result of that, it's more things to talk about. Wheat strong. The weather's going to be kind of unusual. Weather forecast for, 1 to 2 inches this weekend. All add up to a very strong day with gold up, crude oil up, silver up. It was something for everyone in the commodity business.
I take it you're still friendly to bullish, maybe more bullish than friendly to corn
market.
Well,
yeah, I think we have to be very positive, conservative a little bit, but the trend is your friend, and it is very strong at this time.
That would be on the corn for sure.
And the beans aren't exactly weak either, and a couple of reasons. We do have tremendous Chinese demand. That continues. This bean oil, the caloric uptake of Egypt and India and China also is quite strong. And some of those early delayed harvested beans in South America seems like there's a yield, a little reduction. And also, if it's profitable to raise corn in Oakland, Illinois, it's going to be profitable to raise corn in China and also in Argentina. And so there is this idea that, bean acreage, we have to bid up prices a little bit to keep beans from going to other crops.
And potentially you can see that in Brazil already, where they may have an export market enough to export some corn. They have, I think, a record-sized corn crop coming on in that nation. But record size in Brazil is still a very small corn crop, just enough to get them some export market, I suppose. But not enough to worry about, it appears, in the global scheme of things.
Also mentioned this morning, Argentina may even have to import beans from neighboring producers, probably Paraguay, Uruguay, or Brazil, in order to have enough soybeans to process. So that's a kind of a twist in the normal exporty cheap price area called Argentina.
It's interesting. Have you looked at the overall picture of the cash market in the Midwest along the Illinois River for Illinois and Iowa and thought about what the ethanol industry might do to that over the long run? Is it possible that because Iowa has built so many ethanol plants that Illinois could see its ability to export increase as opposed to decrease potentially? What do you think?
I think it used to be when I was growing up as a young grain merchandiser, the export market kind of ruled the roost. Mm-hmm. Processors still had the ability to pay the extra money to get the grain. I think that we're going to see a trend in which ethanol and industrial use corn is going to become more of the dominant market influence in the United States. And transportation costs are a big factor in making that equation work. And, during this tremendous demand point of view, you're going to see tremendous basis swings from season to season. And as a result of that, the processors will probably be able to pay more for grain than, let's say, an exporter. And that's Paul Cooley's personal opinion, and there's a lot of debate out there, and there are other parts of the world, but I think that you'll see a change, and that's one reason why I think you're going to see this tremendous expansion of grain storage in the Midwest. And so it's an evolution that's changing as each day passes here, and I think we'll see it for the next 3 to 5 years.
Boy, it means next week when we have the all-day ag outlook, we'll have plenty to talk about.
And there's a lot of bears out there. And, one would have listened to Commodity Week this last week. I would have come away with a bearish tone to the program. And, it's interesting that things like today happen. But, what we're basically finding is that there's still a lot of people out there that are quite bearish the market.
And a lot of bulls, too.
That's true.
That makes for liquidity, doesn't it?
Outlook meeting.
All right. Hey, we'll talk to you next Tuesday at the Outlook meeting.
Have a profitable day, and it's always fun to talk to you.
All right, Paul. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Taking a look at the forecast from our own Ed Keezer, he says tonight skies will be clear to partly cloudy across the two-state region. Lows will range from 25 in northwestern Illinois to 37 in the far south. Tomorrow, Ed says mostly sunny skies and windy. Highs will range from 35 in northeastern Indiana to 57 in the far southern parts of Illinois. The extended forecast, generally quiet weather expected right on through Friday, Ed says, Ed. A move back to weather pattern will start this weekend and continue into next week with a parade of storm systems coming through every 2 to 3 days. The first will bring windy and wet conditions to Illinois and Indiana this weekend. We'll take a complete look at the ag weather forecast at the bottom of the hour. That with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Dave Dickey's here now to take you through all of the ag news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says that 3 million acres of land in the Conservation Reserve Program will likely drop out next year, largely in response to higher corn prices. Johanns told lawmakers that the number is based on landowners who have not filed paperwork to re-enroll CRP acres in 2008. Meanwhile, national agribusiness trade associations and state affiliate groups yesterday sent a letter to Johanns urging him to provide flexibility for farmers to remove land from the CRP without facing a penalty. The letter was spearheaded by the National Grain and Feed Association. The letter called for Johanns to open up the CRP as soon as possible so that land would be available for production. But National Corn Growers Association is urging caution to wholesale removal of acres from the CRP. NCGA First Vice President Ron Litterer.
Really, a lot of the CRP acres are not prime corn acres. A lot of the acres are wheat acres. Now, if the market dictates that some producers have some land in that they want to pull out of CRP and go to crop production, I think the market will send the signals, and they will do that if they so choose.
In other corn news, House Agriculture Livestock Subcommittee Chair Leonard Boswell will hold a hearing in early March to review feed costs. The Iowa Democrat will focus on the role that ethanol is playing in the run-up of corn prices. The National Advisory Council for Environmental Protection and Technology is recommending to the EPA that it become the lead agency in monitoring any effects that increased ethanol production could have on the environment. In a letter to EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson, the NACEP noted a massive increase in biofuel production could have major beneficial or detrimental environmental impacts. Meanwhile, the chairman of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform is calling for the National Academy of Sciences to examine environmental and economic advantages and disadvantages of biofuel and coal-to-liquid technologies. California Democrat Henry Waxman says biofuel and CTL technology must not worsen the problem of global warming. European Union environment ministers have agreed on binding rules that requires gasoline to include 10% biofuels by 2020. But yesterday's discussion failed to reach agreement on a plan calling for EU nations to reach 20% renewable energy by 2020. And the U.S. and South Korea will focus on agricultural issues during trade talks March 5th and 6th. The talks will take place in Washington, D.C., just days ahead of the start of their eighth round of free trade negotiations in Seoul. but South Korea has already made it clear that rice will not be a topic of discussion at the March Ag Talks. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, inviting you to next Tuesday's All-Day Ag Outlook meeting at the Beef House. Registration starts at 7:30 Central, 8:30 Eastern. We'll kick off the meeting in the morning at 9 o'clock, and Mr. Bossy will be on hand to take up the ethanol issue, along with all of the rest of our analysts, and they'll be around during the day and on the stage to talk about the marketplace. You're invited to the Beef House. It's absolutely free. There is an $8.75 charge for the meal at the noon hour, payable, of course, to the Beef House. Should be a great day. We hope to see you there. Again, that's the Beef House Tuesday next week for the All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. Well, up next, some 3,000 farmers across the state of Illinois should have received a legal issues survey from the U of I. I'll have a report on the goals of the exercise and the task at hand for farmers surveyed. Illinois farmers should have already gotten a survey on legal issues in their mailboxes. It was mailed last week in an Illinois Agricultural Statistics Service envelope. Ann Silvas is an Extension Program Development Specialist for University of Illinois. As she puts the mechanics of the surveys together, Ann says this one was designed to represent the broadest spectrum of farmers economically and geographically across the state. The goals of the survey are simple: to identify what legal issues Illinois farmers think are most important, to develop University of Illinois Extension educational programs to meet those identified issues, and to help the state's legal system accommodate those legal needs. Those are three straightforward goals. Getting the answers to those questions is a bit more daunting, says Silvas, and necessarily so is the four-page survey.
The survey's a little daunting because we listed as many of the issues as we could think of, and we described them as clearly as we could, and then we left lots of options for things we hadn't thought of that would be coming to us under the other category. So those farmers are really going to be helping us figure out what's important, what should we focus on, what do they anticipate is going to be really important for their farming operations.
There are legal questions on the University of Illinois Extension survey that deal with contract agriculture, biotech issues, and leasing property. Don Upman will use the answers to these questions to develop educational materials. He's an agricultural law specialist at the U of I.
A second area that I'm interested in is those sets of questions that ask about whether farmers have actually sought out legal assistance, educational assistance, or the assistance of a practicing attorney. If so, was it helpful? If they didn't seek it out, what were the reasons? And if it wasn't helpful, what were the reasons? And I think that that will be very useful information, not only for me in my educational role, but also for the attorneys in the state of Illinois who are doing their best to provide fee legal services to the farm community.
The team at the U of I is hopeful farmers will return the survey to them by February 20. Ann Silvas expects it should take a farmer about 20 minutes to fill out the four-page survey. Once that's done, she says, just drop the self-addressed envelope and survey back into the mail.
I want all 3,000 back. But people are busy, and sometimes we mail it to someone who doesn't think that it applies, so we always have a little drop-off. Oftentimes those people return the survey and they say, I'm retired from farming or whatever, so it's good to know that. But I hope that we have a 20-25% return. That'll give us great information. And the more the better, because we really are trying to figure out, especially for those people who aren't participating in the educational programming that we offer through Extension, why aren't they? What do they think is important that we don't know about? So it's kind of like this is the way we ask people who aren't there, what do you think is important? It's that this is the way we do that. We send out a survey.
I just want to encourage farmers who do receive the survey, it's not every farmer, but there will be 3,000 of them, that they conscientiously complete the survey because they're the ultimate beneficiaries of the information we will receive.
Again, that's University of Illinois Agricultural Law Specialist Don Utman. He and Program Development Specialist Ann Silvas are hopeful the 3,000 Illinois farmers surveyed about their legal issues and needs will take time to return that survey. Silva says the results will be tallied and posted to the web.
Well, one of the things that we usually do, and I hope to do in this case, is on our website provide summaries of the responses so that we will be able to feed back to them what the important issues were, who was it that responded, what kind of educational programming they're interested in, etc. So we'll provide a way for people to find that out.
There are actually two web addresses where some of the data collected on legal needs by the farm community in the state can be viewed. The FarmDoc website and the Community Development website, both are listed under the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. The Legal Survey is a cooperative effort of U of I Extension, the Agricultural Law Section, Council of the Illinois State Bar Association, and the Land of Lincoln Legal Assistance Association, Prairie State Legal Services, and the Illinois Bar Foundation. A survey of farmers' legal needs is considered to be the first of its kind statewide. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Join us at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on February 27th for our all-day Agricultural Outlook meeting. Registration begins at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. The first panel is at 9 Eastern. The meeting is free. Our headliner is Dan Bossi of Ag Resource. He'll look at the future of food, feed, and ethanol, and we'll have market projections on corn, soybeans, and cash basis, and the latest on crop insurance and agricultural weather. Full details are on our website at WILLAG.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. Time now for our Cash Grains segment. We'll talk today with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. It is just a beautiful day outside, Kay. A lot better than last Wednesday.
Oh, gosh. Last Wednesday I got to stay home, but not so today, but it's gorgeous out here. I mean, we're so used to cold weather that 45 and 50 feels like 70, you know?
It feels like that. It also means it's sloppy out there, so I suspect there's not much in the way of movement today, or am I wrong?
Truck movement, oh, yes. We've got a lot of trucks out here. Well, we've been backed up so long that most of these roads are cleared off enough, and we've still got a lot to come in for February and March. So, yeah, we've got a good truck traffic today.
Loading on to the they're not loading at the bin site. They got to be loading on some heavy rock, I would suppose, or right onto the blacktops out there. So you've got pretty heavy movement of beans and corn both?
Mostly corn.
Beans are still locked down pretty tight then.
They are. These farmers are bullish beans, and, of course, I keep telling them these prices are a gift, and every day it makes me look like a liar, so, you know, I'm going to have to shut my mouth, but, you know, they're extremely bullish beans. They really are, but really, you know, every step up we see in corn, they come and they sell, and then it'll settle down a little bit, so they're just about ready to slam things off, I think, Todd, because it dwindles a little bit more all the time. I had a really good day yesterday, bought some today, but, yeah, it's dwindling a little bit.
And then as you take a look further out, how's the basis going to the southeast?
The basis levels continue to be real sloppy. With a board like this, you're going to see a sloppy basis. But now the nearby levels in train values for corn have gone up 4 to 5 cents in the last week or 10 days. We've passed some of it on with the farmer. But the far out months, there is still kind of a little sluggish. And I think that bean basis is going to continue to stay sluggish all summer. But corn basis should continue to get better as the farmers quit selling their crops.
And your bids for the day?
All right, our cash corn today is 409, cash beans are 745, and new crop wheat is 410.
Thanks much, Kay.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Chief Alinowick dances for the last time tonight at the final University of Illinois men's basketball game of the year. Sports Information Director Kent Brown says the traditional halftime dance will be the only element of halftime other than a short introductory film. Last week, the U of I announced the Chiefs' retirement after this season. Brown says security at the Assembly Hall is always tight, but he wouldn't say whether any additional security is going into tonight's game. An attorney for Illini basketball player Jamar Smith says his client is arranging to surrender to police after a warrant was issued for his arrest yesterday. Smith faces charges of driving under the influence and failure to report an accident. Lawyer Mark Lipton says Smith plans to plead not guilty and wants a jury trial. The 19-year-old was driving in snowy conditions last week when his Lexus struck a tree. His passenger, freshman center Brian Carlwell, ended up with a severe concussion. Authorities say both were drinking tequila and beer at an apartment before the crash. A spokeswoman in the Champaign County State's Attorney's Office says Smith hasn't yet turned himself into authorities. Ground may be broken as early as April on a new office and condominium building now that Champaign City Council members have approved tax incentives. The M2 project would get $3.7 million in financial assistance to be paid back with tax revenue from the new building. The incentives include a new city-owned parking deck meant to ease an anticipated increase in demand for parking as people and businesses move in. The Indiana House has rejected legislation that would have banned smoking in passenger vehicles in which children under the age of 13 are present. Under the bill, tickets could have been issued only if the motorist was stopped for some other offense, such as speeding. People who have lost the ability to talk may someday have a new device to help them regain their communication if the work of a University of Illinois graduate student pans out. Michael Callahan is the first winner of the $30,000 Lemelson, Illinois Student Prize. He's working on a device that takes neurological impulses that normally control muscle movement and translates them into speech patterns. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for our look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, last week we talked to you on the wrong day. That was my fault. But it was a good day to talk to you because it was Tuesday last week and you were traveling across the state in a heavy blizzard. Obviously, you made it where you were supposed to get, and now you're back on the road again, I think, aren't you?
That's right. I'm about a few minutes away from catching a flight down to Tennessee. I'm going to be at the Middle Tennessee Green Conference there in Manchester, Tennessee, and talking to a bunch of producers there. And we've got quite a show to give to them. It looks like we are going to have a drier bias this summer. And, you know, the big news, of course, late last week that we put out was about the NOAA computers starting to show a more definitive decision on La Nina, that we may indeed be headed down that road. And of course, the market on Friday last week reacted to that pretty healthily, and it looks like every model run since then has been following the same line of thinking. So we are seeing stability in this forecast, and so that gives us reason to be a little bit more concerned, I guess, about the summer outlook. We already have some drier bias that's built into our forecast, and that is coming from things like sunspot cycles as well as an 18-year repeating cycle and a little bit of Pacific decadal oscillation, which is sea surface temperatures in the North Pacific Ocean. All these things are kind of pointing towards a drier bias, and then all of a sudden, we've got this La Nina to deal with, and of course La Nina tends to suppress some of the rain potentials for a typical summer season. So if you do that in a year, it's when it's already dry, and it raises a little bit more potential that we may have to be a little bit more concerned about the level of dryness later on down the road.
Yeah, we heard about that on Friday just a bit when we were talking about the markets and watched those pop up during the day. And saw a forecast. I think it actually came from you talking about those NOAA conditions. We called that top actually locally, at least the Lerner top. no, we didn't. I'm kidding you. Well, maybe we did. But we're really pretty interested in the fact that you see those continue to show that. How many times does it need to show that before you get really confident that it's right, or does it just change eventually if it's not going? I mean, is there any historical reference to that says, well, this is more accurate
the more times that you see that model show up. Do you understand what I'm asking you, actually?
Yeah, I think repetition is very important, consistent repetition, and that's true for any of the models that we use, whether it's the 24-hour outlook or whether it's 2 weeks or even the whole summer. We do need to see stability in these models, and that is one of the things that I'm looking at. But, you know, in addition to just this NOAA model that I was looking at on Friday, there's a lot of other evidence that's pointing to La Nina without even looking at a model. For instance, subsurface ocean temperatures in the eastern equatorial Pacific Ocean are considerably below average. Now, we're talking down about 100 to 300 meters below the surface of the ocean. And what I have found over the past couple of years that when we get anomalous ocean temperatures down deep in the water in the eastern Pacific, there's a tendency for that anomaly to be lifted towards the surface. And so what I'm saying here is that since we have a big pool of cool water down deep in the ocean below the surface, it will gradually lift towards the surface, and that obviously suggests that a cooling trend that's already underway as El Nino goes away is going to be continued as long as that cold water is down deep in the water in the ocean. And the bottom line is that there's a lot of reason to believe that if we extrapolate the cooling trend over the next several weeks, which is likely to occur, you know, you all of a sudden looking at temperatures that are below average at the surface of the ocean, which is where we monitor El Nino and La Nina. And so that in itself lends a lot of support for La Nina.
Drew, you have a good, safe trip to Tennessee.
I will, and thank you for your call today, and have yourself a good day.
All right, thanks much. Drew Lerner is the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.